Hello and good day, everyone. It's your host, Kevin Finkel, and this is the podcast all about Pioneer. That's not usually how I start this. Welcome to the First Pioneers Podcast. We're a podcast all about Pioneer format of Magic, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I'm joined by my co-host and our recurring guest, if you guys want to introduce yourselves.
My name is Ryan. I am the Japan hobbyist out of the Tokyo area of Japan.
My name is Harry 13, well, Martin Porter, a.k.a. Harry 13, and I am your go-to Pioneer grinder.
If you've listened to us before, I'll probably go back and forth between saying Martin and Harry, depending on which name I'm looking at the time. So if you know that Harry's on the show, though, that means that we're going to be talking about some competitive Magic, you know, none of our fun stuff that we were going off on last week. You know, I know we got a brew episode coming up for you guys, but this week is all about what's going on in Pioneer since the, you know, no rotations happen, but the standard rotations happen. New set is out, and we want to see some of the impact on what's going on the top level games in Pioneer. You know, there haven't been any super high profile events yet that I feel like, you know, some dailies on MTGO. There have been some, you know, there's a showcase challenge, but I know we've got something coming up this weekend, right?
Yeah, we've got a Pioneer PTQ on Magic Online, which I will be playing in, and I'm very excited. It's going to be an interesting one. I think I've got a good read on the metagame currently, and I'm looking forward to put my theories into practice and hopefully get the crown and get the invite, so looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's what I definitely want to talk about, is what you think is going to be good for that weekend, what you're expecting to see. As well as, you know, we want to make sure to touch on anything that's really new to the format since the latest set has come out, and where those cards are starting to see play.
Yeah, there's actually, I was going to say, there's actually a big tournament coming up in Yokohama tomorrow. Hallelujah's still doing big tournaments, even though it's still kind of crazy for me to even consider going to a, you know, paper tournament in this climate. But, you know, they've been getting like 30, 40 people, so we might have some good results after this weekend to talk about. Anyways, sorry, I just wanted to bring that up real quick.
No, that's good. We always like to get your impact. And, you know, we were just talking about before the show that, you know, some of the lists that come out of Hallyu and the other Japanese major stores, they get really interesting. So, you know, maybe we'll touch on those. I think those are going to be fun. I don't know if that's going to be the same meta that you'll see online, but certainly, you know, if something's working over there, it doesn't hurt to give it a try.
Yeah,
for sure.
All right, where do we want to start off this week?
So the topic, so, right? Did we introduce the topic yet?
Vaguely. Let me go through exactly what we want to talk about. So Zendikar Rising, Pioneer Meta, what you need to know.
Yes.
Where do you want to start off? Do you want to start off with decks or with cards?
Yeah, it's up to you, Harry 13.
Kind of more on the deck side of things. Yeah. Why don't we give it away to Harry? You know, if we're looking at you know, the top decks, you know, you're looking at a top eight. What do you think are the most likely decks you're going to see right now?
Well, there's three main strategies I think are going to be the pillars of the format, which will define where the metagame goes. So one of the, from playing leagues and prelims, one of the most commonly played decks I've seen is mono black aggro. I think it's a lot of, Pioneer is an interesting format. I don't think it's a format that is played often by higher level players, like the kind of pro level players or high level grinders who are, you know, trying to get onto the mythic invitationals or trying to do well there. So what happens often is when you play prelims, you see people default to decks like mono black aggro because it's essentially the jund of the format, in my opinion. It just has a lot of, it generates card advantage through having, you know, recursive creatures. And it's got a lot of disruption, you know, in the hand attack and the cheap interaction. And the,
a lot of consistency being a single colored deck.
Exactly. And it can utilize its lands like Mutavault and Castle Loftwain to, you know, generate card advantage that way, or, you know, make it really difficult for your opponents and punish them for not using their mana as efficiently as possible. So I've seen a lot of people play that deck, and that's going to be one of the pillars. One of the decks it's always been around, but it's became more prevalent now since pre-nerf Lurrus is Orsha of Auras and occasionally Selesnya Auras. So this deck is very powerful, you know, it generates a lot of advantage through Stram and it can create crazy threats on the battlefield really quickly. and they're quite hard to deal with because they have efficient ways to, make your removal redundant through Karametra's Blessing. So I think a lot of people playing that deck because I think it's very good. It's also playing cards that take advantage of, these four color decks are being played right now, a lot of multicolor creatures. So cards like Stonecoil Serpent, Soldier of the Pantheon, they previously weren't really played in the deck. However, because of, the rise of one of the new cards of Zendikar, we all know very well now, a lot of people are starting to play Stonecoil Serpent and Soldier of the Pantheon because of that.
Let's go a little bit more into that deck before you go on. So we've only got two of the pillars yet. We're not holding up our house, but that's kind of a new deck. Let's go a little bit deeper on this. You kind of called it Selesnya Auras. I've heard it. We've had some SRAM decks in the format, but I always want to just call this, is this Boggles?
It's yeah, I mean, it's playing what Glade Cover Scout or however you see that card, the Hexproof 1/1.
Yeah, so Gladecover Scout, Hexproof 1/1 for one, Elf Scout. It doesn't have any other effects, but that is the best cheap Hexproof creature that we've got in the format. I see some versions that have Adento Vanguard usually.
They tend to be played in the sideboard. So, I mean, it's using, as soon as you start playing cards like Ethereal Armor, all these reasonable enchantments just make your creatures go over the top or just become too big to deal with really quickly. So it's quite a scary proposition for any opponent because it really preys upon these decks that try to use, mid-range creatures plus removal plus, these kind of planeswalkers that this deck can really prey upon because you can't target it with Teferi, it's hexproof, and the creatures just kill you in 2 and 3 turns with, the stacked enchantments like all its glitters and Ethereal Armor, and they can create board presence as well with Cartouche of Solidarity as well. So it's a very good strategy at the moment, and it's quite hard to, prey upon. So yeah, I think that deck is going to be played heavily in the PTQ. I've seen a well-known grinder, Alfredo Torres. I think he went 15-0 with the deck in leagues, so he got 3 trophies in a row. So that will probably spark people's interest into playing the deck, and I think it has a 10% share of the metagame at the moment. So
Wow.
it's very well represented. I think it's 10% share between Orzhov and Selesnya. I think Orzhov is the more played deck. I know that Selesnya Auras did well in the first week of the challenges. I think the same player came top four and won the challenge. So I expect to see both Selesnya, but primarily Orzhov Auras featuring on Sunday.
Yeah, so we'd seen a little bit of the Orzhov Auras deck back in the day. It kind of stuck around a little bit after, after the deck mostly fell off, mostly when Lurrus got banned. It was a little good before Lurrus existed, and then it was really good with Lurrus there, and then it kind of fell off when Lurrus was gone. But we said, it existed before Lurrus, we should see it come back. And I think that, it hasn't gotten much from this latest set. I think the only thing that both versions are playing from Zendikar are the new Pathway Lands. So that's really what's amplifying this deck, especially the green version of it. They didn't have a good green white aggressive land, and now they've got the Branchloft Pathway. I think that's what's really making this deck possible where it wasn't before.
And we kind of like made that not assumption, but we made that call. We said, these Pathway Lands are just going to make all of these aggro decks able to be played now. And I this is like really surprising to me to see this deck doing so well after such a short time.
Yeah, we had green red in mind, we had blue black in mind. I don't know if we remember, but like, hey, there's good cards in green and white. They just haven't been playable in Pioneer
Yeah.
really until now.
Had no idea that green white was even going to show up.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that as well. I mean, I thought I wasn't even sure if Orzhov Auras was going to be that good, and then not only was it good, Selesnya was very good as well, and it put up results. So yeah, fair play to these brewers, that kind of thought, you know what, why don't we venture into green and see where that takes us? And turns out it's a good avenue to go with the deck. So
I just want to say I'm really happy to see people like taking the chance to, brew new decks, to make new decks. It feels like the metagame is really evolving now, instead of people just playing, what they're used to playing.
I agree. I think Pioneer is in a good place in terms of, I don't think there's a clear best deck in the format, and I think people don't like that. I think people want to, you know, they want to know how to build their decks and what to expect. I think now the metagame is more established, but it's established in a balanced manner, and I'm thankful that Pioneer is one of these formats where, you know, the latest fire classic design that has been spouted out in some of the recent sets hasn't warped the format, because, you know, like, Uro never really made Pioneer a miserable place to be, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was always just a good mid-range card to play in the format. No one was ever complaining about it, Pioneer, but every other format was on fire because Uro piles were just dominating everywhere. And even back before
I was going to say, like, they just, the other decks didn't have the tools. I mean, there's just such a limited, you know, how can I say? I don't know about Modern and stuff like that, but in Standard, you just never really had a good way to get rid of that card advantage, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's funny. I think a lot of the issues that have happened in Modern are basically because of the fetch lands. So I'm very thankful that the fetch lands are not in Pioneer. You know, I like the idea of really good fixing, but the way that, you know, the fetch lands just incidentally fill up your graveyard is just not a good place. And having cards like Dig for Time being legal in Pioneer, like, that card is just so fun to play with. And obviously it's very powerful, but it's the fetch lands that make it powerful over the top. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's slightly undercosted in terms of in a non-fetch land world, but fetch lands just make the card unplayable. It's too good. So
That's true.
Yeah, because I loved playing with it in Standard as well. It was amazing.
And, you know, I just want to say, I think it's funny that I feel like this isn't the first time where, Pioneer is just so well sheltered from everything. There's chaos going on everywhere else in Magic. And, you know, what I think back to is when Companions were taking over every single format. And Companions, before the errata that really nerfed them, they were actually in a pretty reasonable place in Pioneer. You know, they were in maybe 40% of decks. They were good in the decks where they were in. They were making some decks possible, but they weren't, like, you know, completely dominating the format. There were good reasons not to play them. There were reasons to play a lot of different ones. And it's kind of similar here, where there's a lot of powerful cards. Like, no one's really complained about Fires of Invention in Pioneer. No one's really complained too much about Uro, you know, maybe a little bit. So now that all the common combo is gone, I think that a lot of things in Pioneer are just kind of, you know, hey, it's good. Everything's good. Nobody's upset about anything.
I agree.
I also kind of want to piggyback on this topic about Pioneer being in a sweet spot. I feel like Pioneer is able to get kind of inspiration from so many different sources. You got decks coming from Standard that are just being updated, you know, to, you know, be competitive in Pioneer. You have original Pioneer decks. You have decks coming from, you know, Historic on Arena that people are just kind of trying to update as well. And then you also have decks that are coming from Modern. So you get all these different ways to kind of build decks. There's not, how can I say, there's so many different ways to think in this format.
I agree. And before Zendikar came out, I was getting a little bit worried post-ban because I managed to split the finals of a challenge from the last week, which was great for me, to one of my friends, Claudio, who always plays 5-color Niv. But the thing that worried me was I was essentially playing a deck that was 67 cards from Standard out of 75. I think it was as much as that. And I think Jeff Hoogland, like, retweeted, like, quoted my tweets and saying, Pioneer's just all the busted Standard decks from, like, the past year. And I found it funny, but I was getting kind of concerned because I was thinking, this just isn't Standard Plus again, because before the banning, Pioneer had a real identity in the fact that it had the Heliod combo, it had Inverter, it had Lotus Breach, you know. And I think the issue with it was people just don't like losing to combo decks and not having interaction at any point in the game. And I don't think at that point the decks were too good. It's kind of weird. I just think it was a banning to make the format more fun to play, I guess. And now, so after that happened, I was getting worried because I was like, oh, Team of Reclamation is really good, and I wasn't seeing anything unique. But now that Zendikar's came out, we've had this resurgence of decks like Mono Black Aggro, which is the Pioneer deck. It's only played in Pioneer, you know? It's distinctively...
Yeah, it's been around for a while now. Like, it's been one of the things that has really lasted through pretty much every iteration of Pioneer.
It's the Jund of Pioneer. It's just always going to be there. Yeah. It's always going to be there, you know? And... You know, we could deck slide, we've got 5 color Nev coming back, we've got Orchard of Auras, which is distinctively Pioneer in terms of its build. So, and a host of other decks in the format now that I feel like every league's completely different for me now. I don't know what I'm going to get paired up against. I might see one of the 3 big decks in my league, but there's always new and interesting decks. I've even seen a Lutri deck. I was like, Lutri, who's playing Lutri? And it looked good. And I was like, this is wild. And, you know, yeah, the format's really good right now.
Then they'll draw the other half of their deck and it won't look so good maybe next time.
Yeah, true.
That's the problem there. So real quick, while we're on the tangent, I wanted to talk just a little bit about Mono Black, because I don't think the deck's changed, and I thought that it was going to. Like, there were some cards that I really wanted to try out in Mono Black. I have tried some of them. Like, I didn't think that Scourge of the Skyclaves was any good in that deck. But, you know, I think early on, a lot of the decks were playing the Skyclave Shade, and that seems to have mostly disappeared from the more recent lists. Like, do you want a quick comment on that? Do you think that it's worth playing? Or are there any other cards from the Zendikar set you think should be in that Mono Black, or is it kind of just it's still there because it's still good against question mark and there's a lot of question mark?
Yeah, I mean, the issue with is a Skyclave Shade or that card is that it can only be done in your turn. You're not going to play Fetchlands and Mono Black, and the reason why Scrap Heap Scourger really gets the nod is because you can do it, and since you can do it at the end of your opponent's turn, you know, and that's the issue is, you know, you can dodge Wrath, it can be played at instant speed essentially. So it's, you know, one of the main reasons why Mono Black is so good is it's so efficient with its mana. It's able to utilize its mana all the time, punishes opponents for not using their mana efficiently, as, you know, recurring creatures. It has lands that generate additional value, like Mutavaults if you're flooding out, or Castle Lochtwain to, you know, gain card advantage, and that's what makes the deck so resilient, and that's why it's, you know, it's always, it feels like it's every match it plays is close or is winnable, and that's why a lot of people are drawn to the deck. And yeah, basically Skyclave, Sorcery Speed, Scrap Heap Scourger, Instant Speed, and that's why it gets a nod.
That makes sense. The only other place that I thought it was really maybe was affecting it is like the Jund Sacrifice, Bola Citadel decks, Mayhem Devil.
Yeah.
The fact that Skyclave only has one toughness is a big difference from you don't want to shoot that thing twice, but if you can just ping the 3/1 and kill it, that's a big difference compared to.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the decks I've noticed a slight decline on is Jund Citadel. Like, that was played prior to Zendikar. It was played quite a lot. I've noticed it's still played to some degree, but it's definitely on the downswing. Also, some decks are incidentally playing Spikefield Hazard, so that could be a real issue for the card.
Yeah.
Because I know I was trying it out in Team of Reclamation just to make more land drops in the deck, but make the cards relevant as well. So, yeah, I think the main reason is basically it's Sorcery Speed. However, the X1 toughness is not something to ignore either.
I'm personally seeing far fewer of the spell lands than I would have expected. You know, when I was trying out Mono Black Aggro, I think I had one of the kill spell. I think I had a couple of the Agadeem's Awakening. You know, I figured it's kind of free. But I've been seeing a lot fewer people doing that than I would have thought. Like, I would have expected to see people jamming them in every deck that's in the colors. And I haven't seen that as much. What have you been seeing? And are there any places where you're like, oh, this is the spell lands are really good in such and such deck?
Oh, just in decks in general, not tied to Mono Black.
I mean, I'm surprised I don't see them in Mono Black, but I'm just wondering if they're not in Mono Black, where are they or where should they be?
Okay, so the reason why I think Agadeem's Awakening is not played in Mono Black is because the majority of the creatures come back from the graveyard anyway. So you're not really gaining much advantage for playing it. I do think 3 life is a real cost, and I think that you can't really afford to play tap lands in that deck. It's a kind of pseudo tap land, right? But you need to use your life as a resource for the Castle Lockwind as well, and you can't always rely, as well as Murderous Riders, you can't always rely on your 2-3 lifeline resolving and hitting as well. So it definitely comes at a real cost in the deck, and I think the upside, given the fact that a lot of your creatures recur from the graveyard, isn't enough of an upside for me to want to play it personally.
Oh yeah, that is another awkward thing is, they don't really have any three drop because Spawn of Mayhem, it you want to play it as a three drop, but it has a four casting cost, and Murderous Rider, when it dies, it goes to the bottom of your graveyard. So it's hard to get those in your yard.
Exactly. Where I've been seeing the cards is a deck that is completely designed to take advantage of these spell lands, the Oops All Spell decks. You're bound to have seen some of them. They are wild. When I first played against one, I was like, oh, I'm dead. Turn four, I'm dead. I'm just dead. Oh dear. So they're a really sweet innovation. I hate them because I'll never play them. I think I tried playing one once and I got completely hosed by some control decks.
Oh, I had a good time playing them. It is a deck that very much can be hated out. I don't think that it's ever going to be a problem in the format because it's just so easy for them to put a hate card in and make your entire deck
Yeah,
invalid.
it's a glass cannon for sure. It's definitely enjoyable to see it pop up and you're like, oh, I just lose. Oh, I lose again. Better do something about that so I don't lose again. Yeah, the deck's really sweet. And if the viewers out there, listeners out there don't know about it, it uses the Balustrade Spy. And what's the other one called? The three.
Undercity Informer.
So it uses these two cards to take advantage of being the possibility of having no actual lands in your deck. You use all the spell lands, and when these creatures, when the Undercity Informer sacrifices something for one mana, or the Balustrade Spy enters the battlefield, you can mill your deck until you reveal a land card, which you obviously don't have in the deck. You play two Worldspine Worms so that you don't, if you don't win that turn, because you're playing cards, your typical dredge cards, your Prized Amalgams, so that you can bring them back at the end of your opponent's turn, so you don't mill out, and you basically just win the game because you're playing like Creeping Chills.
Creeping Chill, Silver Smoke Ghoul, Prized Amalgam. So you'll usually have like 15 power or so on the board, as well as having drained life for 12. And you can do this, as soon as turn 3 with a very good draw, usually turn 4.
Yeah, exactly. And you also have the option of playing Thassa's Oracle in the deck. Just and I've seen I tried out a deck that was blue black. The deck had two red lands because you were playing Flame to Fame, but I didn't think the red lands were worth the really situational opportunity of playing Fame, which I didn't think was how you win the game anyway. So that deck basically was heavily relying on Thassa's Oracle, claiming Thassa's Oracle out from the graveyard or naturally having it in hand. That was really fun to play as well. That had a lot of hand attack and it played Augur of Bolas, and because all your lands are spells, you always hit with Augur of Bolas, which is amazing. Like you almost always
Oh, that's
hit.
pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, like it's
Because
just
Augur of Bolas is usually look at the bottom three cards of your library.
It's just like scry three to the bottom, so that deck has been really sweet. I've really enjoyed seeing these random decks pop up.
I do feel like I want to just quick go on the tangent because of like a history lesson is that Oops All Spells is one of my favorite decks' names of all time. So there was a big history in Legacy where people were naming their decks after cereals. So the big one was Cheerios, which was named after the fact there was a lot of cards in the deck that had a zero casting cost, so it had that nice little zero that looked like a Cheerio. So people were playing a lot of, they were playing, I'm trying to think of some of the other cereal names, but for a little while there was five or six decks that were named after cereals in Legacy, and there's a cereal called Oops All Berries, which is just a, I think it's, there's a normal brand, and then they've got a version of it that's only the berries because people like that kind of cereal more. And the thing with the deck is, you're playing the deck, and you hit your Balustrade Spy or your Undercity Informer, and you're like, okay, I'm gonna start milling until I hit a land card, and you flip your deck over and you say, oops, all spells, and then you win the game. So that's just really fun, and the fact that it ties into like the history of Legacy na deck naming is just such a cool little fact that I had to like go on that tangent and call it out.
No, that's really sweet. That's so cool. That all went over my head. I didn't realize that was a thing. because I don't tend to play Legacy, you know. So, yeah, that's a really neat little nugget of information there.
Yeah, and this kind of deck is coming for Legacy, where, you know, traditionally they would do the same kind of thing by playing, you know, they would play Moxen, or they would play, you know, non-land mana sources, Lotus Petals, things like that. Here we do it by just playing lands that are spells.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So there's been some more innovations. We haven't even spoken about four color Omnath. What do you?
Yeah, let's go ahead and go into there, because is this a pillar? Let's preface it there. Do you consider that to be a
definitely a pillar. So
okay,
four color Omnath, it goes into different branches. It's basically just any deck that wants to use the power of Omnath splash into the color, which is normally red, white. Actually, my brain's just kind of fried there. Is it red or white?
Red, white, green, blue.
Yeah.
It's non-black normally.
Yeah, it's Teemer. It's Teemer splashing white normally, or on occasion Bant splashing red. So you've got like three different archetypes. You've got the original, which was basically four color ramp. So you were using not only Omnath but Lotus Cobra from the new set. So you'd be using them, and you'd be using cards like lands like Fabled Passage and some number of Evolving Wilds to really abuse the effect of Lotus Cobra. You'd play cards like Escape to the Wilds to generate just more land drops, infinite, you know, just so much card advantage, and you would have the top end of like, you'd use cards like Agent of Treachery, I think there was an Oog in there, and a Genesis Ultimatum. That's like your top end. In the mid game, you've got, you know, your classic, your fire all-stars. You've got Teferi Time Raveler, you've got Uro, you've got Omnath, you've got the new card that I really like, Felidar Retreat, and you basically just, you're almost like goldfishing to an extent, because you're like, okay, I don't care about your one or two drops. I'm playing a five drop, I'm playing a seven drop. Like, just move aside. I'm going to just swamp you with sheer raw power here. So that was like the original list. They also played a Boreal Grazers and tried to play Yorion, just to really just generate so much card advantage. And the deck seemed really potent. You've got two other ones. You've got basically four color Reclamation that is Teemer Reclamation, but they just splash white for Omnath, Teferi, because why not? They're both great cards. Who cares about the flash game? Doesn't matter. Just play all the good cards in one deck. So that's where that deck is, and that is a real soup. It's a soup of, you know, you're playing a flash game, but you're also playing tap out game. As I said, they're just all good cards, so just play them all. And the deck's actually pretty good. It made the final of the challenge last weekend. And yeah, it just looks really solid. And you've got the last version that has been coming in and out, but I noticed Corey Baumeister posted a list recently. It's four color fires, so it's using Yorion, but it's using like Oath of Nissa, Chained to the Rocks, Fires of Invention, and then playing similar cards to what the first iteration of Omnath, the, you know, Agent of Treachery is just the kind of obvious choice in those kind of strategies, but it's also playing like Perry, I think it's playing Narset as well, and it's doing what Jeskai Yorion does with Jeskai, but it doesn't have the look of combo. It's playing a more quote fair quote strategy in terms of, you know, you're not trying to cheat Agent of Treachery into play, you're just trying to generate a lot of ramp and, you know, bring it out naturally through Fires of Invention. So these are the three.
Well, of course, I, you know, the other place that I've seen it is Niv-to-Lite, but I think that's just Claudio, who plays everything kind of Niv-to-Lite.
Yeah, Claudio is he's just mono Niv-to-Lite. Lives, eats, breathes, and sleeps Niv-Mizzet Reborn. So he won't mind the shout out. So yeah, I mean, but that card's always gonna, you know, complement that deck. So
I was gonna ask. So you know, Kevin, you were talking about, or sorry, I don't know who was saying about fires decks. You said Corey Baumeister. I can't say his name.
Corey Baumeister. Yeah.
Yeah. He was playing that. So it has. four-color Omnath supplanted that deck? Has it taken over that, you know, like, are people playing that in, like, Fires is more fringe now? Or is this just another flavor, you know, that we're seeing from, like, that kind of, how can I say, Fires of Invention type, like, build, like a variant?
Well, let me see his list. You know, if I remember right, he ended up just outside of the top eight on this showcase from this last weekend. I'll see if I can find his list.
Yeah, I think to comment on whether or not it's replaced Jeskai, I wouldn't say so. I think it's too early to call, because I'm pretty sure this is from less than a week ago. And, you know, I think it's still in, it still needs to be tuned and refined, because you normally tend to start with, well, what's all the good cards in these colors that have been played before? Let's just pile them all together and then work out the numbers from there. So I'm not too sure on that one. But it's definitely in contention with Jeskai, Lucca. Personally, I've always found Jeskai, Lucca to be lacking somewhat. I would kind of put it in the same area as Esper, Yorion. I just feel like there's just something not quite there to really push it over the top. In terms of Esper, Yorion, it's always been the mana base. It's just not having access to Dreome, which just makes it so much less consistent than the, you know, the other, the color pairs. And with Jeskai Lucca, I don't really know what it is. I think it's there's just a lot of decks that can outgrind the ability of Agent of Treachery because of Yorion. You know, if they take your land, you tend to like slam Euro, gain the land that you took from me back, and then still be on parity with the opponents. So I think having access to Omnath definitely makes, you know, your draws a lot more consistent in terms of what powerful things you can do on your turn. So
see, when I play Jeskai Lucca, I tend to constantly win and hate every second of it, because that deck can just be miserable for the opponent.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty, it's almost, it can be quite goldfish to an extent. Like, I don't know, I've played it before as well, and I've never really enjoyed playing it. A lot of your turns are very intuitive most of the time. So there's not really a lot of, I don't
choices,
find it, yeah, it's just not really interesting in terms of gameplay. I'm not really being stimulated in the magic sense from playing the deck, if I've ever played it. And I don't know, I've just always felt like Agent of Treachery as being your ultimate win con is never really good enough.
Yeah.
It's good enough in standard.
I do agree that some of those decks really do feel like, you know, you're kind of, you've got all this card advantage. Even some of the, like, you know, like the Bant Yorion decks where your win con is something like a big Teferi. Like, yeah, I guess that maybe we'll win eventually, but it just feels so, if they have some kind of disruption for it, it's just going to be such a grind. If they can answer your one or two actual bombs, then it doesn't do anything.
Yeah, and you've got decks like, I just feel like because five color Bring to Light's in the format, I always just feel like they're just doing one thing bigger than you are. You know what I mean? I just feel like I get paired against. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to like play this game, and I'm like, oh, I'll take a land or I'll do this, and then they just slam a Niv-Mizzet, and they've got like six cards in hand from having like one, and then they have all these this interaction, and I just feel like I just run my wheels just lose spin. And I think the fact that you're relying so heavily on Agent of Treachery and stuff to get you over the top that you just end up losing or running out of win conditions, basically.
So I was going to say real quick, there's like three or four decks that are playing Omnath right now. We talked about the four-color Omnath, which is kind of like coming right from Standard, I believe. And then Niv-Mizzet, you said, plays it. But Wilderness Reclamation is
sometimes,
also.
Sometimes, yeah. Yeah, that's what we were going over. We were saying like, yeah, it has kind of its own deck, which is like the kind of the Temur ramp decks, but it also, you know, kind of fits into Temur Reclamation, kind of fits into the Temur or the other Bring to Light ramp Niv-Mizzet decks. It even kind of fits into these rampy, what were we just calling them, Fires of Invention decks. So kind of goes in a lot of places.
So I was going to say, like, I mean, we have a ramp deck. Niv-Mizzet is kind of like a mid-range deck. Would you say the Wilderness Reclamation is kind of the control deck with Omnath?
Yeah, I mean, it plays at instant speed, right? As much as you can do whilst having, you know, four Teferi Time Raveler, or three Teferi Time Raveler, three Omnath, I think it plays, three Uro as well. So it does have, like, an element of tap out, but it does play four Mystical Disputes, four Expansion Explosions, four Growth Spiral. It plays a bunch more, it'll play, like, more counter spells on the sideboard. So it's kind of like the way I tried to play it when I did was to, it's like pivots between, you know, am I going to be proactive or reactive, kind of like a tempo strategy. And yeah, I think it's not as intuitive as it looks. It looks more
difficult.
Yes, it looks more difficult than it actually is. It becomes quite intuitive once you play it, but it looks quite unintuitive looking at it because you're like, oh, well, there's so many sorcery speed cards, but you're playing Wilderness Reclamation. Like, why'd you do that? But you actually, you force your opponent to deal with, like, your value threats, like your Omnats, your Teferis, and they just kind of run out of gas. And you never really run out of gas because you just, like, fire off an expansion explosion. And I think that's where a lot of the power in the deck lies. The deck still suffers from the same issues that Team of Reclamation suffered from, is that it doesn't really deal well with very aggressive decks or decks like Auras. Like, Auras is like a thorn in the side of it. I think if Auras wasn't a deck, this deck would probably be the best deck to play in the format. It just doesn't have a lot of interaction in the main deck. Its interaction relies on just going over the top and playing cards like Teferi to bounce your opponent's threats. But with all the protection from multicolor going on in the format, you can get punished by, you know, playing these four color decks in Team of Reclamation. No, four color Reclamation especially suffers from that. So, yeah.
Okay, bringing us back to where we kind of started this conversation is pillars of the format. So we said Mono Black Aggro. We said Auras is acting like a pillar right now.
Omnath
Can
decks
we
is
safely
three.
Lump yeah. five different decks into the Omnath circle of midrange and just call that a day? Or is that too simplifying the Niv to Light, Wilderness Reclamation, you know, Fire's Invention? Is it fair to lump those all together as kind of a mid-rangey, grindy card advantage tank?
Yeah, I think you can, because, I mean, those decks are defined by Teferi, Time Raveler, Omnath, and Uro. These just kind of value engines, or, you know, they're just like the answer. Teferi, Time Raveler isn't necessarily a must answer. Omnath, the turn it comes down, isn't a must answer, but I definitely think Uro Escapes is a must answer because you're just going to lose. It's a fast clock and it generates so much value. I'd lump them in the same.
It's a good way, yeah.
Yeah,
I like calling them value engine decks. That makes sense.
Yeah, I definitely think they're similar enough to basically put them into the same pile. Like, you need to be aware of that these decks exist. You know, so don't play a. You know, I don't think playing big red is a good idea right now. I think you're just going to get absolutely destroyed by these decks.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm not seeing much mono red. Yeah. There is green red. Do we want to talk about that? Is that a pillar, do you think, though?
I don't think so. I think it's probably tier 1.5. Like, I think it's definitely out the top 3-4 decks of the format. It's definitely. Let me check Goldfish real quick for this. It's got 4% share of the meta right now, and that's what I kind of expect it to have, because it's definitely played to some extent, but not a lot. I think it's played more in leaks than anything else, but when I've ever played like challenges or prelims, I've not seen it around. I just don't see how they beat these Uro Omnath piles unless they get lucky and get a really aggressive start. I think these decks are generally just going to take care of the grill strategies.
Or they have the tools to take care of them, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So, as I said, like, if you're an unsuspecting four-color reclamation strategy, you might fall prey to gruel, but I imagine looking at these deck lists, like, four-color fires has got, like, four Chain to the Rocks, you know, and a lot of cards that gain them value, like four Uros, four Omnath, four Teferi, and I think most of the time, over three games, this deck should take care of that deck. So it's got four Verdicts, three Anger of the Gods on the board, you know. I don't see how Gruul can fight that and consistently come out better.
I was going to change gears here. Lotus Combo was actually putting up decent numbers post banning last season, is it still a top tier deck, or
yes,
has it just been outclassed?
No.
Yeah, so you mentioned it briefly, but let's make a clear distinction here. Are we through with the tier one decks, the ones that we're considering the pillars of the format, and we're moving into other decks you'll likely see? Or do you still consider things like Lotus Combo, Rakdos Pyromancer that are going to be on that next level of meta share? Are those still pillars or no?
I think they're like decks to definitely, you should always have them at front of mind, but I don't think they're going to take up more than 5% of the share each. So I definitely think they're not the main pillars of the format, but they're definitely ones to
their mainstays.
To bear in mind. Yeah, they're mainstays. So I played a couple of well-known players in leagues playing Lotus Combo, and you kind of know that the deck has been picked up when it's, you know, some of the stronger players like Matteo Rizzi. I played against him in a league who's playing Lotus Combo, and a few other players that are quite well-known. So, but unfortunately for them, I was packing Narset's Reversal in my sideboard, and two games. One game I got to Narset's Reversal, a Thought Distortion, which not only put it back to my opponent's hand, I just ripped their hand apart. Another game I got to, my opponent cast Granted, I think it was Matea, and I got to Expansion the Granted, search for Narset's Reversal. I don't think it was him, I think it was someone else. Opponent freezes, goes to get Emrakul. No, not Emrakul, Ugin. So I was like, well, I've just stopped you from getting your Thought Distortion, which you'll never get for the rest of the game. And it's also very good against like Dig for Time and Pour Over the Pages, because you just like, you've just cleared your graveyard. I'll take your Dig for Time, put it back. It's also been good against like Dolvin's Veto and other incidental cards in the format, so that was fun. I was definitely prepared for Lotus Field when I started seeing players like Matea pick it up. I definitely think it's very popular at the moment.
So we're moving away from the tier ones. Now we're getting into other decks to be ready for. We talked about Rakdos, we talked about Lotus Combo, we talked a little bit about Gruul Midrange. Is there anything else that you should expect to always see, like in a league or some other big tournament?
Well, we've got Harry here. I think it's an appropriate time to talk about control decks.
Yeah. I've got, I'm so happy. I'm so happy that Gillian Waffle Tapper showed me the light with this deck. So I am playing blue black control. The deck on paper looks like a ham sandwich. It looks unplayable. It plays a copy of Rewind in the deck. It plays Raska's Content, one copy. It plays Glimmer of Genius. It plays counters, three negates. It was playing three negates main at one point. It was playing one Fatal Push main at one point. And your win cons are Shark Typhoons and Torrential Gearhulks. So when I first looked at the deck, I was like, at this point, I was going like 3-2, occasionally 4-1, bunch of 2-3s with various Omnath piles, and I couldn't really work out why I wasn't being successful. So I was kind of like, I'm just going to play something else. And I was like, this blue-black deck doesn't look good, but Masters playing it, I'm just going to play it. Immediately 5-0'd, and it was great. Your opponent can't resolve Teferi if it never resolves, because you've got infinite counter spells. But it's weird, it generates a lot of advantage. Like Castle Lockwain seems unintuitive in the control deck, but it actually worked really well. And Shark Typhoon is one of the best cards in the format, and this deck really shows why. It's just so hard. It's so hard to play against. Like it just destroys a lot of strategies. And yeah, draw go is good again, and it's really fun. Like I've had a lot of, you know, 4-1s, 5-0 and stuff. About the three leagues I played with it, I had like 2 4-1s and a 5-0. Most of the games I lost were down to, you know, mulliganing to 5 and just, you know, getting a bit unfortunate. But the deck feels super powerful. I've had such great success against not only Mono Black, but Auras and Omnath decks. So I'm really liking my position going into this PTQ. Black has amazing cards that deal with a lot of these strategies, like Extinction Events, Shadow's Verdict. That card from the new set has been so good. It just I don't know how Mono Black really beats it unless they have like Rancor, Spawn of Mayhem, and you can't interact with it. But it just
which card is that?
Shadow's Verdict.
Okay, yeah. So that's the 5 mana sweeper. Okay,
yeah. Got it. It just kinda clears the board, and a lot of these like Omnath strategies, or even Niftalite, try to like pivot between, you know, having a planeswalker like Teferi on the battlefield as well as like Uro or something like that, or like have Uro in the graveyard and you have to deal with the planeswalker and the threat, and you just take care of all of them with the Wrath. So yeah, I've been really impressed with this deck. I haven't been as confident with a deck only since Inverter. Like, I've just got really strong hopes for this deck on Sunday. Yeah, and I think it's starting to get more awareness around it. However, I think it's still relatively in the dark in terms of people being prepared for it. And
so, okay, I just have to ask, yeah, did you try out Jawari Disruption, the land spell that's a force spike?
I tried it out in Team of Reclamation. I wanted to try it there because my deck was so mana hungry that I wanted to play it. However, I think it's just worse than Censor, because Censor is never really bad. Like, it's good in the early, like sometimes you can blow out your opponent by getting them with Censor, but you can just cycle it for one mana in the mid to late game.
The one mana draw card, yeah, is better than the backside being a land.
Yeah, okay. And I think it's especially true if you're playing cards like Dig for Time, where you really want to find ways to fill your graveyard, to, you know, to find like to double spell as fast as possible, like Dig for Time plus removal spell or Dig for Time plus counter spell. So I think Censor is definitely more important in the deck there, and I think you have enough cantrips between four ops and 3 to 4 sensors to consistently hit land drops like turn 1 to 3 to 4 kind of thing. I think like it's really important you hit your first 3 land drops with the deck, but I think you can afford to miss a land drop because people are playing very clunky spells, like, you know, as I said, like Omnath's a 4 mana spell, and Felidar Retreats and Fire's Inventions and Wilderness Reclamations and so on and so forth, that, you know, it's not the end of the world if you miss your land drop. But
I might have to hop on and try this deck. You know, I'm looking at your list right now,
yeah,
because it's on MTG Goldfish, and if you don't run the 2 Brazen Borrowers in the sideboard, you know, that's $60 or 60 tickets of the 100 tickets this deck is, and the other 30 is Shark Typhoon. So this is a pretty cheap deck, actually.
Yeah,
I might have to just grab this.
It's definitely accessible. Like, I have made changes to it. So I decided that one Fatal Push in the main was not enough. Like, I didn't want to just get blown. I think if I'm playing one Fatal Push main, I'm basically conceding the draw to a very aggressive deck like Gruul or something. So I upped the count from 1 push to 3. I took out the Thassa's Intervention because it's quite...
I love that card.
I love it, but it doesn't really synergize as well with the deck. Like, you can't do anything with it with Torrential Gearhulk. I think there's a lot of situations where you want to counter something, but you just don't have enough, and it's quite clunky having to spend like 4 or 5 mana in the early to mid game to counter something. But I took out the third negate, the Thassa's Intervention, and I took out the fourth center to play 2 more Fatal Push main and 1 Brazen Borrower main, because I think that Brazen Borrower is pretty good to have access to in the main, because I guess it's another win con. It's not really, but it's just quite versatile. And then in the board, I decided I wanted to have access to cards like some Silver Bullets and 1 copy of Narset's Reversal. I play 2 copies of Narset now. I might change it to 1, but I think Narset, although you're playing a flash game, I think Narset's good enough in control mirrors, and it bricks a lot of strategies, especially the Omnath strategies, that it's worth the having access to them, because I think Notion Thief, you want access to both, especially against like Lotus Field. But I think Notion Thief is still susceptible to cheap interaction. So that's why I've kind of went to have 2 Narsets on the board as well.
Hey, just on that topic, you know, we saw a card in Zendikar Rising that was supposed to be good hate against those ramp strategies, the Confounding Conundrum. Has that seen play anywhere? Would that make sense to counteract any of these Niv-Mizzet decks, or is it just too slow or something? Not Niv-Mizzet, these Omnath decks?
I don't think...
That's the one where when a land enters, they have to bounce the land. Like, if they play more than one land a turn, they have to bounce a land.
I don't think it's kind of hard, right? I don't think it's too slow. I just don't think it's impactful enough. And I don't know if it's like... I don't know if it's a case of it's just not quite impactful enough that it's not worth the slot. I've not really even tried it out. I just, in theory, just haven't really thought it was going to be that effective, because they have access to Growth Spiral, so it's kind of, you know, if you're playing,
you just do it on your turn.
Yeah, yeah.
If, you, if they bounce one, you'll get it back. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just think bouncing a land is probably not very good in the long run because you're basically just giving Omnath more fuel. And mm-hmm. I don't like what sounds like it would be good initially. Actually, just end up not being good because you're just giving your opponent cards to bounce and cards to just, you know, refuel Omnath and stuff. And yeah, I'm not too sure on that one. It might be good enough, but I just think there's more important Cybo cards than that, considering it's relatively low impact for me anyway.
I wanted to quickly ask why this over Esper, like Esper Yorion.
The mana base in Esper Yorion is pretty bad. I played Esper Yorion a few times, like the week.
Hot Garbo. Yes.
The week before, I got to the like split the challenge finals. I played Esper Yorion and came ninth, and I just felt like there were just games where I just couldn't draw. I didn't have the right balance of, you know, lands and spells, or I didn't have the lands I needed to cast my spells, and vice versa. And I just felt like this deck would be definitely good to very good if it just had access to, you know, an Esper Trion, but it doesn't. Like, the mana base just doesn't support it. And I've seen people play two copies of Field of Ruin as well as Gaia Reach Sanitarium, and I just thought, no, that this just isn't, you can't support this. And I remember, like, someone on Twitter just said, oh, people just need to mulligan better, and I was kind of like, I feel like I'm quite confident in my own mulligan skills, and I feel like that's not a justification to play a deck that doesn't have a mana base that can support it. The only way I could see it being viable is if you're just basically playing...
We lost you there.
Oh, sorry, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, sorry, I don't know what was up with that. I don't know if it was my headphones. Sorry, anyway. So, I think the only way the deck could be viable is if you play a blue-black splash-white strategy where you're literally just splashing white for... Teferi Time Raveler, Teferi Hero, and maybe Oath of Kaya, and maybe Veto on the board. I think that would make the deck more serviceable. So you play like Extinction Events or Shadow's Verdict, and maybe even the Eldest Reborn. Like, I don't know how bad that card would actually be. I think it's worth looking into as well.
I like that. Yeah, I mean, I think Eldest Reborn mostly got hated out by Elspeth Conqueror's Death.
Yeah, but if you look at the format, if they're playing Auras, you know, people are playing Auras and people are playing less go wide strategies and more big chunky creatures like Omnath, then maybe it's not so bad.
Yeah, maybe in that case you need to go back to what was the 3-mana it was one of those ones that ticks up, but it was like the opponent sacrifices a creature, or you like you destroy a creature two or less, and you take a card from their hand and then you exile their graveyard, but it was like 3-mana.
Yeah, Elspeth Conqueror's Death. No, sorry, Elspeth's Nightmare.
Yeah, Elspeth's Nightmare. Yeah, that would be the other way to go.
I really like that card as well, and I actually
that one started to see play when Auras was good back in the day of Lurrus. Yeah.
Yeah, I played that one of when I came ninth the week before. After the bannings of Inverter, I played one of copy of Elspeth's Nightmare, and it was really effective. It's also incidentally pretty good against the Rakdos deck. Because they play cards.
Yes.
They play cards like Young Pyromancer, they play Dreadhorde Arcanist, and they play obviously a myriad of, you know, card advantage in terms of Village Rites, Colligan's Command, etc. So I think that card would be ideal against that matchup. It's almost like a 3-for-1, which is amazing. So yeah,
as well as exiling their graveyard seems huge.
Yeah, definitely. I definitely am a big fan of Elspeth's Nightmare for sure.
So I mean, I'm sorry if you guys want to talk a little bit more about the meta. I think that's fine. But you know, we've talked about the top tier decks. We've talked about, you know, what other decks you kind of have to be ready for. Have we really talked about what new cards have shown up other than Omnath?
I've tried to call them out whenever we see them.
I mean,
and I've tried to ask about a couple cards that haven't shown up that I would have hoped would have, you know, just because they didn't make the cut. Anything else? Yeah, I think that's kind of like, as we get towards wrapping up, anything else that, hey, this is a cool impact from the thing?
From Zendikar,
any
right?
Other decks? Yeah, from Zendikar. Or if you have any other decks that you're like, hey, don't forget this exists. Be wary of, you're going to see blank this weekend when you play in the Pioneer Open. Or Pioneer, what is it called? Pioneer something.
Yeah, I mean, I should know this, and I don't even know. Ever since they changed the Pro Tour to something else, like, I wasn't even... I wasn't even sure of what it was called anymore. So,
yeah.
There's like 20 different tournaments now.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. I've given up looking at the championship route or whatever they call it, competitive play, the pathways and all that. However, talking back to the Zendikar cards, obviously I definitely think Omnath is going to be there, and you should expect to see that. I'd expect to see some Cyborg cards. Like, don't think your opponents are playing black, don't have access to enchantment removal. Feed the Swarm is a very good, diverse Cyborg card to play now. So if you're thinking you're going to get off scot-free for playing against a black deck, if you're enchantment and you're, you know, enchantment heavy deck, then you need to reconsider how you sideboard. Maybe, I don't know, if you're playing green, like Heroic Intervention or something, or, you know, you need to change the way you plan your sideboarding strategies against black if you have enchantments that you want to protect. Wrath's Shadow's Verdict is very good and very relevant to the format, so I'm definitely playing two copies of my sideboard this weekend. And if you're a creature, you know, a low to the ground creature strategy, a deck we haven't talked about, but I know we've spoke for a long time about decks already, so I don't know how much time we have left, but Orcs of Humans is another deck that's came out. But if you're playing a very low to the ground aggressive deck, you should really consider Wrath's like Shadow's Verdict that will be able to wipe your board and you have little interaction against it. Be mindful of that as well.
Yeah, I think that's one we want to quick call out as a new card is Luminarch Aspirant.
Yeah.
I think I called out pretty early as going to be a strong card. I'm glad to see that showing up in the humans list and some of the white aggro lists.
Yeah,
well, I'm glad that the Lotus Cobra that you guys said would not see any play in this format ended up being like in the top deck. But anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, you got us there.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, as you said, like a Luminarch Aspirant is called. Good card. I think it takes the role that Benelich Marshall held in these kind of human decks before, which is obviously a lot easier on the mana and it's a lot more easier on the curve. So that card is very strong and I expect to see that played. And, well, anyone who's playing Orcs of Humans will be playing that card. And the other one is the Spirits card, the... what's it called? The 3/1 white exiles.
Skyclave
Apparition.
Skyclave Apparition. That's the one.
Yeah, that card is very good. unfortunately for Spirits, it still doesn't beat Shark Typhoon, but it's it's a card to consider coming to the sideboard, and I think it's a great addition to that strategy, and it keeps that strategy, you know, moving forward with the rest of the format. You know, the Spirits doesn't get left behind. I think that strategy is also viable for the weekend anyway.
With Rattle Chains, he gets Flash, which basically almost makes it another Spell Queller.
Exactly.
Yeah, it gets to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that we can't really find the time to talk about everything we want to talk about in Pioneer within one episode of the podcast. You know, that shows how good the format is and how diverse it is. Apart from that, off the top of my head, I can't really think of any more major cards in the new set that we'll see play this weekend. Well, obviously, no, that's a lie. Every single Sultai spell land we'll see play if it's playing Nuptial spells. So there's that, you know.
Hell yeah.
So apart from the spell lands,
the pathways.
Yeah.
I was going to ask about all the modal lands. I mean, I'm guessing those are going to show up here and there.
Yeah, definitely. One card I was kind of sad to see not make as much of an immediate impact was the Seagate Stormcaller. That card is sweet. I love that card, but I think that it hasn't quite
made some big waves in Historic with that combo deck. The dual caster mage, Neoform.
I know, I'm sad we don't have that. You know, Lutri has the same text almost, but for some reason Lutri says you have to cast it. So otherwise we could have done that in Pioneer.
Yeah, that would have been sweet. Go back to combo, doesn't ban combo, bring combo immediately back in the format. That'd be nice.
I don't know how good that'd have been. Bring back Kethis while you're at it.
Yeah, oh no, I love that. I hate that deck. I don't know why. I hate playing against that deck even more than I hate playing against Lotus Field or Lotus Breach. Like, I don't know.
Oh, you must have never been on when I was talking about this, because I was playing that deck for a year and a half before they unbanned Oath of Nyssa, and then suddenly it's, you know, tier one and everyone's playing it, and I'm like, oh man, yes, and it gets banned like a month later.
Yeah,
I got no time with it. It was so sad.
Oh, that's such a shame. I'm gonna pretend to shed a tear for you whilst I'm laughing. I'm laughing with this podcast. No.
How about sideboard recommendations, real quick? We kind of talked. You said there's not too much in the ways.
So, is Graph Diggers or something to hate out, something like the spells deck, unnecessary, or is it okay?
It depends what you're playing, right? I'm not playing any graveyard hate in my sideboard. I don't think I need it. I think I've got a lot of interaction for what the format's trying to do when it's trying to use the graveyard. I would definitely consider your sideboard options for the kind of aura strategy. So maybe like Edict Sacrifice. Effects. Yeah, like yeah. Liliana's Triumph, I think it's called. Like, consider cards like that, or cards that have, like, I think Back to Nature was starting to see some play. I definitely played two in my sideboard when I played Team of Reclamation. You just want in, like, something to interact with enchantments with, because if you're a kind of slower deck and you don't have ways to deal with auras, then you're probably going to have a hard time doing well in the tournament, because there's definitely going to be a sizable amount in the field. You definitely want, depending on how your deck's built, obviously graveyard interaction is good to have. And I think for most of the strategies, like, there are some elements of graveyard synergy. So Soul Guide Lantern is a good card to play. It's probably one of my favorite graveyard interaction spells that's quite fair in the format. If you're playing black, you now have access to better enchantment removal. So maybe Feed the Swarm. And or you have the Farika's Liberation. That's like a very good card to play, because it's
three mana, enchant, sacrifice, enchantment.
Yeah. It gives you access to, you know, both an edict effect and enchantment removal, so that's definitely a card I'd consider playing. I think people should just take my advice. If you're playing blue, just stick a copy of Narset's Reversal on your sideboard and thank me later. Like, that card is,
I like it.
Yeah, that card is just, I don't understand why it's seeing next to no play. The card is a silver bullet, and it's still very playable in blue mirrors where you want to have it.
I mean, I think most people go with Mystical Dispute as kind of a catch-all, but maybe a slightly stronger silver bullet makes more sense.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, but I am going to bring us, we're getting over to be an hour here.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring us to kind of a quick recap and then go to the end of our show. So kind of recap what we said: pillars of the format, mono black aggro, the auras decks, and kind of these value train decks, things like Omnath, Niv-to-Light, Wilderness Reclamation, and Fires. And we said kind of after that, there's a lot of other decks to pay attention to. You know, format's still quite wide open. We don't think anything is overpowered right now as far as, needing to be banned. Certainly, I don't think we would say that. Good place to be. I'm really excited to see what the results of this weekend are. Wishing you great luck with your blue-black control deck that you're going to be playing there.
Thanks very much.
Anything else? Yeah, if you guys want to reach out to us, so I'm at MTG Pioneer on Twitter. That's a good way to reach me. You can find links to our Discord. It's a great place to give feedback on the show. You can also find our special guest, Harry.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is at MartinPorter13. You can find me there. I'm going to be consistently posting my latest deck lists and discussing Pioneer to hopefully give you all an insight into the format.
Yeah, I've been following both you and Amit Eternal religiously over the last few weeks, seeing all these sweet brews that you guys have been trying out. So definitely recommend following you guys on Twitter. And if you guys want to follow me, I talk about so many random things, including magic. You can follow me at Yoshwenky, which is Yoschwenky.
All right, that's going to be the end of our show. Thank you guys so much. Appreciate all of our listeners out there. Hopefully this is keeping you up to date with what is currently strong in the world of Pioneer, because we are your go-to source of Pioneer information online. Your first Pioneer podcast, signing off.